Chapter 64. Unmanageable younger, the newfound time and inclination to tear yourself from Mr. and Mrs. Boffin and come to see us at all. I only wonder that our claims, contending against the superior claims of Mr. and Mrs. Boffin, had any weight. I feel I ought to be thankful for gaining so much in competition with Mr. and Mrs. Boffin. Apostrophe. The good lady bitterly emphasized the first letter of the word Boffin, as if it represented her chief objection to the owners of that name, and as if she could have borne Doffin, Moffin, or Poffin much better. Ma, apostrophe, said Bella, angrily, you force me to say that I am truly sorry I did come home, and that I never will come home again, except when poor dear Pa's here. For, Pa's too magnanimous to feel envy and spite towards my generous friends, and Pa's delicate enough and gentle enough to remember the sort of little claim they thought I had upon them, and the unusually trying position in which, through no act of my own, I had been placed. And I always did love poor dear Pa better than all the rest of you put together, and I always do, and I always shall. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here Bella, deriving no comfort from her charming bonnet and her elegant dress, burst into tears. I think, R.W., apostrophe, cried Mrs. Wilfer, lifting up her eyes, and apostrophizing the air, that if you were present, it would be a trial to your feelings, to hear your wife and the mother of your family depreciated in your name. But fate has spared you this, R.W., whatever it may have thought proper to inflict upon her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here Mrs. Wilfer burst into tears. I hate the Boffins. Apostrophe, apostrophe, protested Miss Lavinia. I don't care who objects to their being called the Boffins. I will call them the Boffins. The Boffins, the Boffins, the Boffins. And I say they are mischief-making Boffins, and I say the Boffins have set Bella against me, and I tell the Boffins to their faces. Which was not strictly the fact, but the young lady was excited. That they are detestable Boffins, disreputable Boffins, odious Boffins, beastly Boffins. There. Apostrophe, here Miss Lavinia burst into tears. The front garden gate clanked, and the secretary was seen coming at a brisk pace up the steps. Leave me to open the door to him, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wilfer, rising with stately resignation as she shook her head and dried her eyes. We have at present no stipendiary girl to do so. We have nothing to conceal. If he sees these traces of emotion on our cheeks, let him construe them as he may. Apostrophe, with those words she stalked out. In a few moments she stalked in again, proclaiming in her heraldic manner, Mr. Oaksmith is the bearer of a packet for Miss Bella Wilfer. Apostrophe, Mr. Oaksmith followed close upon his name, and of course saw what was amiss. But he discreetly affected to see nothing, and addressed Miss Bella. Mr. Boffin intended to have placed this in the carriage for you this morning. He wished you to have it, as a little keepsake he had prepared it as only a purse, Miss Wilfer, but as he was disappointed in his fancy, I volunteered to come after you with it. Apostrophe, Bella took it in her hand, and thanked him. We have been quarreling here a little, Mr. Oaksmith, but not more than we used. You know our agreeable ways among ourselves. You find me just going. Goodbye, Mama. Goodbye, Lavi. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and with a kiss for each, Miss Bella turned to the door. The secretary would have attended her, but Mrs. Wilfer advancing and saying with dignity, pardon me. Permit me to assert my natural right to escort my child to the equipage which is in waiting for her. Apostrophe, he begged pardon and gave place. It was a very magnificent spectacle indeed. To see Mrs. Wilfer throw open the house door, and loudly demand with extended gloves, the male domestic of Mrs. Boffin. Apostrophe, apostrophe, to whom presenting himself, she delivered the brief but majestic charge, Miss Wilfer. Coming out. Apostrophe, and so delivered her over, like a female lieutenant of the tower relinquishing a state prisoner. The effect of this ceremonial was for some quarter of an hour afterwards perfectly paralyzing on the neighbors, and was much enhanced by the worthy lady airing herself for that term in a kind of splendidly serene trance on the top step. When Bella was seated in the carriage, she opened the little packet in her hand. It contained a pretty purse, and the purse contained a banknote for £50. "This shall be a joyful surprise for poor dear Pa," apostrophe said Bella, "and I'll take it myself into the city." ... As she was uninformed respecting the exact locality of the place of business of Chicksey Veneering and Stobbles, but knew it to be near Mincing Lane, she directed herself to be driven to the corner of that darksome spot. Thence she dispatched the male domestic of Mrs. Boffin, ... in search of the counting house of Chicksey Veneering and Stobbles, with a message importing that if R. Wilfer could come out, there was a lady waiting who would be glad to speak with him. The delivery of these mysterious words from the mouth of a footman caused so great an excitement in the counting house, that a youthful scout was instantly appointed to follow Rumty, observe the lady, and come in with his report. Nor was the agitation by any means diminished, when the scout rushed back with the intelligence that the lady was a slap-up gal in a bang-up chariot. ... Rumty himself, with his pen behind his ear under his rusty hat, arrived at the carriage door in a breathless condition, and had been fairly lugged into the vehicle by his cravat and embraced almost unto choking, before he recognized his daughter. "My dear child!" ... he then panted, incoherently. "Good gracious me! What a lovely woman you are! I thought you had been unkind, and forgotten your mother and sister. ... I have just been to see them, Pa dear. ... Oh! And how did you find your mother? ... asked R. W., dubiously. "Very disagreeable, Pa, and so was Lavi. ... They are sometimes a little liable to it, ... observed the patient cherub. "But I hope you made allowances, Bella, my dear? ... No. I was disagreeable to Pa. We were all of us disagreeable together. But I want you to come and dine with me somewhere, Pennsylvania. Why, my dear, I have already partaken of a, if one might mention such an article in this superb chariot of a Savoy, replied R. Wilfer, modestly dropping his voice on the word, as he eyed the canary-colored fittings. Oh, that's nothing, Pa. ... Truly, it ain't as much as one could sometimes wish it to be, my dear, ... he admitted, drawing his hand across his mouth. Still, when circumstances over which you have no control interpose obstacles between yourself and small Germans, you can't do better than bring a contented mind to hear on again, dropping his voice in deference to the chariot Savoy's. ... You poor good Pa. Pa, do, I beg and pray, get leave for the rest of the day, and come and pass it with me. ... Well, my dear, I'll cut back, and ask for leave. But before you cut back, said Bella, who had already taken him by the chin, pulled his hat off, and begun to stick up his hair in her old way, do say that you are sure I am giddy and inconsiderate, but have never really slighted you, Pennsylvania. My dear, I say it with all my heart. And might I likewise observe, her father delicately hinted, with a glance out at window, that perhaps it might be calculated to attract attention, having one's hair publicly done by a lovely woman in an elegant turnout in Fenchurch Street? ... Bella laughed and put on his hat again. But when his boyish figure bobbed away, its shabbiness and cheerful patience smote the tears out of her eyes. "I hate that secretary for thinking it of me," she said to herself, "and yet it seems half true." Back came her father, more like a boy than ever, in his release from school. "All right, my dear. Leave given at once. Really very handsomely done. Now where can we find some quiet place, Pa?" spa, in which I can wait for you, while you go on an errand for me, if I send the carriage away? It demanded cogitation. You see, my dear, he explained, you really have become such a very lovely woman, that it ought to be a very quiet place. At length he suggested, near the garden up by the Trinity House on Tower Hill. So, they were driven there, and Bella dismissed the chariot, sending a penciled note by it to Mrs. Boffin, that she was with her father. Now, Pa, attend to what I am going to say, and promise and vow to be obedient. I promise and vow, my dear. You ask no questions. You take this purse. You go to the nearest place, where they keep everything of the very, very best, ready-made. You buy and put on the most beautiful suit of clothes, the most beautiful hat, and the most beautiful pair of bright boots, patent leather, Pa, mind, that are to be got for money, and you come back to me. But, my dear Bella, take care, Pa. Pointing her forefinger at him, merrily. You have promised and vowed. It's perjury, you know. There was water in the foolish little fellow's eyes, but she kissed them dry though her own were wet, and he bobbed away again. After half an hour, he came back, so brilliantly transformed, that Bella was obliged to walk round him in ecstatic admiration 20 times, before she could draw her arm through his, and delightedly squeeze it. Now, Pa, said Bella, hugging him close, take this lovely woman out to dinner. Where shall we go, my dear? Greenwich. Said Bella, valiantly. And be sure you treat this lovely woman with everything of the best. While they were going along to take boat, don't you wish, my dear, said R.W., timidly, that your mother was here? No, I don't, Pa, for I like to have you all to myself today. I was always your little favorite at home, and you were always mine. We have run away together often, before now, haven't we, Pa? To be sure we have. Many a Sunday when your mother was a little liable to it, repeating his former delicate expression, after pausing to cough. Yes, and I am afraid I was seldom, or never as good as I ought to have been, Pa. I made you carry me, over and over again, when you should have made me walk. And I often drove you in harness, when you would much rather have sat down, and read your newspaper. Didn't I? Sometimes. But Lord, what a child you were. What a companion you were. Companion? That's just what I want to be today, Pennsylvania. You are safe to succeed, my love. Your brothers and sisters have all in their turns been companions to me, to a certain extent, but only to a certain extent. Your mother has, throughout life, been a companion that any man might look up to and commit the sayings of, to memory and form himself upon, if he liked the model? Suggested Bella. Well, yes, he returned, thinking about it, not quite satisfied with the phrase. Or perhaps I might say, if it was in him. Supposing, for instance, that a man wanted to be always marching, he would find your mother an inestimable companion. But if he had any taste for walking, or should wish at any time to break into a trot, he might sometimes find it a little difficult to keep step with your mother. Or take it this way, Bella, he added, after a moment's reflection. Supposing that a man had to go through life, we won't say with a companion, but we'll say to a tune. Very good. Supposing that the tune allotted to him was the Dead March in Saul. Well, it would be a very suitable tune for particular occasions, none better, but it would be difficult to keep time within the ordinary run of domestic transactions. For instance, if he took his supper after a hard day, to the Dead March in Saul, his food might be likely to sit heavy on him. or if he was at any time inclined to relieve his mind by singing a comic song or dancing a hornpipe, and was obliged to do it to the dead march in Saul, he might find himself put out in the execution of his lively intentions. Apostrophe, poor pa. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thought Bella, as she hung upon his arm. Now, what I will say for you, my dear, apostrophe the cherub pursued mildly, and without a notion of complaining, is, that you are so adaptable. So adaptable. Apostrophe, indeed I am afraid I have shown a wretched temper, pa. I am afraid I have been very complaining, and very capricious. I seldom or never thought of it before. But when I sat in the carriage just now, and saw you coming along the pavement, I reproached myself. Apostrophe, not at all, my dear. Don't speak of such a thing. Apostrophe, a happy, and a chatty man was Pa in his new clothes that day. Take it for all in all, it was perhaps the happiest day he had ever known in his life, not even excepting that on which his heroic partner had approached the nuptial altar to the tune of the Dead March in Saul. The little expedition down the river was delightful, and the little room overlooking the river into which they were shown for dinner was delightful. Everything was delightful. The park was delightful, the punch was delightful, the dishes of fish were delightful, the wine was delightful. Bella was more delightful than any other item in the festival, drawing Pa out in the gayest manner, making a point of always mentioning herself as the lovely woman, stimulating Pa to order things, by declaring that the lovely woman insisted on being treated with them, and in short causing Pa to be quite enraptured with the consideration that he was the pa of such a charming daughter. And then, as they sat looking at the ships and steamboats making their way to the sea with the tide that was running down, the lovely woman imagined all sorts of voyages for herself and Pennsylvania now. Pa, in the character of owner of a lumbering square-sail collier, was tacking away to Newcastle to fetch black diamonds to make his fortune with. Now, Pa was going to China in that handsome three-masted ship to bring home opium, with which he would forever cut out Chixie Veneering and Stobbles, and to bring home silks and shawls without end for the decoration of his charming daughter. Now, John Harmon's disastrous fate was all a dream, and he had come home and found the lovely woman just Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.